أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم All the distinguished guests Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh Peace and blessing of Allah be upon you all Firstly I would like to express my sincere gratitude to all of the guests who have joined us here this evening. Earlier this year, when the organizers proposed holding this peace symposium, my initial response was that we have held this event for over two decades. And some people quite reasonably ask what has been the benefit and whether it has led to any meaningful change in society. In recent times, many influential people, including politicians, scholars, and religious leaders, have condemned the rising tide of global warfare and injustice, and urge governments and citizens alike to prioritize peace and security. When such people, who in the eyes of the world have fame and influence, see their warnings go unheeded, who then will listen to my voice or the voice of our community? It is therefore fair to ask if there is any benefit to holding this event. Nevertheless, my response is that Islam teaches us to strive relentlessly for good and never give up. And what greater good could there be than striving to save humanity from self-destruction? If we do not put a halt to the warfare, violence, hatred, and injustice that is rapidly corroding the fabric of modern society, it shall not only cause widespread devastation in our lifetimes, but shall cast a long shadow over the lives of the generations that follow. Over 70 million people perished in the Second World War, and the vast majority were civilians, ordinary men, women, and children. It is a small mercy that the death and destruction remained largely confined to that era, but with one harrowing exception, Japan, upon whom two atomic bombs were dropped in 1945, whilst hundreds of thousands perished immediately, the radioactive legacy haunted their next generation as well. Various studies have shown that children of survivors faced heightened risks of neurological and physical disabilities, whilst stillbirth rates climbed among pregnant women exposed to radiation. In 1945, only the United States possessed an atom bomb. But today, several nations possess nuclear weapons, whose power and destructive capabilities dwarf the bombs dropped on Japan. Consequently, if God forbid, even one or two countries ever deployed such weapons, the resulting carnage and catastrophic long-term effects would be far beyond our comprehension. A growing number of influential figures are now sounding the alarm against warfare and injustice, recognizing that continuing down this path of reckless aggression will lead to a catastrophe unparalleled in human history. They are rightly imploring nations to step back from the brink before it is too late. Instead of letting ordinary people build better lives for their families, why are the world's leaders propelling mankind towards the precipice of an unthinkable calamity? Indeed, as humanity, we must ask ourselves why we are waging war not only against one another, but against our children, grandchildren, and future generations. In this regard, I shall now present a selection of recent statements by public figures about modern warfare and failure to uphold justice in the world. Last year, Ireland's then president, Michael Higgins, warned, "We have entered an era in which the belligerent rhetoric of war dominates global discourse, whilst traditional diplomacy and the search for common ground have been cast aside." He observed, "Rather than a concerted effort to build a mind of war, what humanity needs now is the building of a mind of peace." Similarly, Slovakia's Prime Minister, Robert Fico, spoke candidly last year about how the drumbeat of war and saber rattling have become normalized. He said, "Everyone is talking about war. Everywhere, everyone is rattling their weapons. When it comes to Ukraine, everything is clear. When it comes to Iran, when it comes to Gaza, nothing is clear." He continued, "The double standards are absolutely obvious. Forgive my openness, but I will say that the world has gone mad. I simply don't understand why everyone seems to like war. As Prime Minister, I don't like war. I am for peace." The double standards he speaks of inevitably breed frustration and resentment. One of Islam's fundamental teachings is that one should desire for others what they desire for themselves. It is my firm conviction that if this golden principle were truly acted upon, the world would be transformed into a heaven of peace and understanding. Following the outbreak of the Iran war, Germany Vice Chancellor Lars Kilian also spoke against this war. "Whilst I commend anyone who speaks out against injustice, those who wield authority and influence must also demonstrate the practical steps they are taking to make good on their words. Unfortunately, when it comes to actual policies or taking decisive action, then they do little or nothing. More words, no matter how impressive or wise, cannot bring about peace on their own. During a visit to Turkey, Pope Leo declared that the Third World War is being fought piecemeal, and that the future of humanity is at stake. The Pope and others are now acknowledging what I have long warned about, that a world war has already begun, and that piece by piece the world is sleepwalking ever deeper into its grip. Regarding the risks of escalation, Spain's Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, recently said, "You cannot answer an illegality with another illegality, because that is how the great catastrophes of humanity begin. Very often, great wars break out due to a chain of responses that get out of hand because of miscalculations, technical failures, and unforeseen events." This is a wise and important observation, that injustice by one party does not give a license to others to do the same. Today, certain major powers are acting with impunity, brazenly, disregarding international norms and pursuing narrow self-interest above all else. Yet, they ought to remember that unjust or illegal actions are never conducted in a vacuum. They should not be blind to the reality that they too will suffer if the world descends into chaos and the foundation of peace are shattered. Undoubtedly, injustice is a malignant virus that spreads rapidly. Thus, if today the major powers violate international laws with no consequence, then tomorrow lesser powers will be emboldened to act with equal disregard for law and human life. The Spanish Prime Minister also observed that wars are often used as a diversion to mask the failures of governments and their leaders. He said, "Governments are here to improve people's lives, to provide solutions to problems, not to make people's lives worse. And it is absolutely unacceptable that those leaders who are incapable of fulfilling this duty use the smokescreen of war to hide their failure and in the process line the pockets of a select few." In other words, the pursuit of power and material gain is causing nations and their leaders to betray the very people they were chosen to serve. He laments that instead of saving lives by building hospitals, billions are being spent on ending lives by building weapons of mass destruction. Professor John Mearsheimer a renowned American political scientist recently said. I think in the West, and this is especially true in the United States, we like to talk about military power. Of course, the Israelis do as well. And the idea is that any political problem we see can be solved by military means. Just bring out the big stick and engage in big stick diplomacy, and we shall solve the problem. He further warned that the Iran war represents a fundamentally different situation and cautioned that a failure to secure a swift resolution could trigger a global economic depression. And so the truth is that no part of the world is immune from the toxic effects of warfare and injustice. History shows us that when nations fear their power is threatened, they resort to force and injustice to salvage their supremacy. And when their victims eventually rise, they too are consumed by a raging desire for revenge. In this way, a vicious cycle of war, violence, and iniquity churns relentlessly as the transgressions of the power on the powerful incite the oppressed to adopt the very injustices they once suffered. Precisely for this reason, Islam teaches that we should restrain the hand of the oppressor and the oppressed. While we are duty-bound to aid the oppressed, we must equally ensure they do not pursue vengeance and remain strictly within the bounds of proportionality. The American economist Jeffrey Sachs recently offered a stark assessment of the world's failure to heed the lessons of history. He argued that the institutions and frameworks of international law constructed after the Second World War have been completely dismantled, leaving the United Nations as ineffective today as the League of Nations was in the late 1930s. He said, "We have never seen this kind of lawlessness in the nuclear age. The United Nations is essentially useless right now. The failure of the United Nations is something I've addressed many times. It continues to operate under a system in which the five permanent members of the Security Council hold an absolute veto, a privilege and power far beyond that of other nations. This fundamental inequality lies at the heart of its failure. If, however, true justice and fairness existed in international relations, neither the United States, nor Israel, nor Iran, nor any other nation would have any cause to resort to war." In a widely reported speech earlier this year, Canada's Prime Minister, Mark Carney, stated, "The rules-based order is fading, that the strong can do what they can, and the weak must suffer what they must." He too acknowledges that different rules apply to the rich and powerful. Nonetheless, powerful nations that exploit this principle should recognize that the use of force and coercion is a short-sighted and counterproductive strategy. Invariably, it breeds frustration, disorder, and instability. Similarly, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz recently warned that our freedom is no longer simply guaranteed. It is under threat. The international order based on rights and rules no longer exists in the way it once did. Despite these words, Germany, like many other developed nations, continues to utilize its power to maintain dominance at the expense of weaker nations. They prioritize strategic alliances over principle and turn a blind eye to the cruelties of their allies, rather than standing for truth and justice in all circumstances. In recent times, one justification often given for Western interventions in foreign countries has been the liberation of the women and girls of those nations. Tragically, though the thousands of women and girls killed by foreign bombs expose the hollowness of such claims. Following the outbreak of the Iran war, a Spanish MEP, Irene Montero, asserted that the rights of women and girls are cynically exploited as a pretext to advance geopolitical agenda. She said, "No woman has ever been freed by American bombs or illegal aggression, not in Syria, not in Iraq, not in Lebanon, not in Afghanistan, and it will not happen in Iran either. We are fed up with our rights, our bodies, and the violence women suffer being used as excuses to justify illegal bombing and imperialist aggression." Her words expose a sobering truth that powerful nations seek to justify their injustices and wars on false pretexts of defending human rights. Increasingly, people are waking up to the dangers of the moment. Yet, it is a cause of grief for all sincere Muslims to know that many people seek to blame Islam and claim it to be the cause of the world's disorder. Such allegations, amplified by mainstream and social media, are utterly false and extremely harmful. Rather than scapegoating Islam or any other religion, what the world urgently needs is for people to unite with a common purpose, the establishment of peace and harmony. The Ahmadiyya Muslim community has always been at the forefront of this effort and shall continue to be so. We convene this event in the hope that it may foster mutual understanding and, at the very least, inspire some people to serve the cause of peace. It was with this same objective in mind that several years ago, I wrote to various world leaders, urging them to set aside their differences and work together for the sake of humanity. For example, I wrote to the Israeli Prime Minister, invoking the teaching of the Torah, and to the Iranian president and other Muslim leaders, drawing upon the Holy Quran, urging them all towards justice and reconciliation. I extended the same message urging peace to the British Prime Minister, the US President, China's President, and many other heads of states. My sole objective was that they might reflect upon the deteriorating state of the world and recognize the existential risks facing humanity. Sadly, they were not willing to listen. And the ever-increasing volatility and disorder in the world is testament to that failure. Wars are being fought, nations are being divided, hate is spreading, minorities are being targeted. In this era, tolerance, grace, and compassion are all too often seen as weaknesses or flaws rather than the virtues they are. All the while, it is being alleged that Islam is an extremist religion and the root cause of the world's afflictions. This is a grave injustice. Not one of the statements I presented earlier made any reference to Islam. Rather, they pointed to the geopolitical failures of governments and the collapse of institutions designed to safeguard peace and security. Global disorder is driven by the desire of the rich and powerful to fulfill their vested interests and maintain their dominance over others. Far from being a source of conflict, Islam's teachings offer a timeless path towards peace. To illustrate this, I shall draw upon a few verses of the Holy Quran. Chapter 4, verse 136 states, "O ye who believe, be strict in observing justice and be witnesses for Allah, even though it be against yourselves or against parents and kindred." Here, Allah calls on Muslims to uphold absolute justice and equity. It requires a person to stand ready to testify against himself, his parents, his loved ones, or his community for the sake of truth and justice. The verse continues, "Whether he be rich or poor, Allah is more regardful of them both than you are." Therefore, follow not low desires so that you may be able to act equitably. In other words, a person's social rank or material wealth counts for nothing in the eyes of God. What matters is the sincerity of one's commitment to truth and justice. Thus, Muslims are commanded to resist the low desires that obstruct the path to true equity. Similarly, in chapter 5, verse 9, it states, "Be steadfast in the cause of Allah, bearing witness in equity, and let not a people's enmity incite you to act otherwise than with justice. Be always just, that is nearer to righteousness." Here too, Allah commands Muslims to uphold fairness and integrity in all circumstances, even towards those who stand against them. It is easy to fulfill the rights of others, of those on your side. The far greater test is to fulfill the rights of those who oppose you. In a passage of profound relevance in today's war-torn world, chapter 49, verse 10 of the Quran states that if two nations or parties engage in conflict, it is the duty of others to strive to reconcile them. Should a peace deal be established, but then violated by one party, others must unite against the aggressor and apply proportionate force to bring an end to their cruelties. Yet, once the aggressor returns to peace, they must not be subjected to revenge. Rather, their honor and dignity must be respected. This is the means of ensuring sustainable peace. In every situation, whether dealing with the mighty or weak, the weak, the righteous or the transgressor, Islam teaches us to act with fairness. Moreover, achieving peace also requires a spirit of sacrifice. It cannot be that one nation expects concessions from others whilst refusing to make any of its own. Although I speak from an Islamic perspective, I firmly believe that justice is a universal principle that serves as the guarantor of peace at every level of society and amongst the people of all faiths and beliefs. Religious differences should never cause a person to reject wisdom from the followers of another faith or tradition. Islam teaches that every wise word is the lost property of a believer, to be adopted wherever it is found. Whether it comes from a Christian, a Jew, an atheist, or anyone else, such an open-minded spirit not only enhances a person's moral character, but also deepens their commitment to justice, tolerance, and peace. Despite the troubling global realities I have outlined, I firmly believe that while certain individuals and nations covet the power, wealth, and resources of others, the common heart of humanity simply wishes to live in peace. Every person, therefore, has a role to play, and the urgency of that role weighs heavier by the day. As the Pope said, a third world war has begun piecemeal, and we must strive to halt its spread before it engulfs the entire world. Otherwise, I fear its scale and subsequent loss of life shall far eclipse the horror and of the previous two world wars, reaching a level unprecedented in the history of mankind. Such a catastrophe will not be ours alone. Its long and haunting shadow will darken the horizon of future generations. So we must not only think of ourselves. Instead, we all have a duty to consider the world we are leaving behind for our children and those who follow us. Let us act now so that those who come after us may inherit a world of peace and prosperity rather than bear the burden of our failures. Let us act now so we may spare ourselves the reproachful glances of our children. asking why we bequeathed to them a world set on fire. Only then will this peace symposium have fulfilled the promise of its name and not merely be a gathering of good intentions, but a turning point in the pursuit of peace. Indeed, it is my profound hope and prayer that this event serves as a true catalyst for peace and justice, bringing forth a lasting change in the world. May Allah the Almighty enable mankind to understand the gravity of this moment, and may all people, irrespective of their faith and beliefs, join together in the common purpose of establishing peace in the world. May the dark clouds of warfare that hover menacingly all around us dissipate and give way to bright blue skies of peace, love, and compassion. With these words, once again, I express my deepest gratitude to you all for joining us this evening. Thank you very much.
That brings us to the end of the formal program. As is our tradition, His Holiness will now lead us in silent prayer. We pray by raising our hands, and you may join us in any manner you feel comfortable.
The silent prayer. Amen. I mean.